Welcome to The Bridge. Fun conversations on culture, life, and everything in between.
Find us where you get your podcasts. If you like the show, then consider pushing the like button or giving us 5 stars. Suggestions, comments, anything you would like to share, email us at welovethebridge@gmail.com. We love The Bridge. Welcome to The Bridge. Women hold up half the sky is a famous quote in China. Many countries around the world, too, are working towards increasing equal access to leadership positions, STEM jobs, and education and treatment in our society. Women's Day is March 8th around the world. What's your take? Where do we go from here? And we have a woman with us. What do you think, Alex?
How lucky are you? We grew up with the sentence, hearing that, and I feel like I'm lucky enough to have witnessed and have been surrounded by very strong women, and not in a very specific or narrow sense. So, yes, much agree to that statement, and maybe a little bit more.
You know, my experience in China as an American has always been that all of my leaders have all, I mentioned this before, and it's still true today, are always women. When I was working for a major and international company, my direct line superior was a woman, and her direct line superior was a woman. And I moved to a kindergarten. My boss in Beijing was a woman, and my other boss, and I had two managers, both were women. Then I moved to Wuhan and with the same kindergarten, and all three of my leaders were women. Then I moved back to Beijing to work here in media, and my producer is a woman, and both of her direct line supervisors are women. So since I've been in China, I have been the employee of women consistently for 12 years.
Yeah, strictly under female leadership.
Yeah, exactly. And I was filming a shot recently for a video, and I was kind of just being comical with my words, and someone says, "Oh yeah, we have to do this for the boss or that for the boss." And I said, "I don't have a boss. My wife is my boss." And I think that they got really confused. I had never seen this facial expression. They were like happy and confused at the same time. It was a new expression, but yeah, I take orders at home too. I come home and then it's time to clean the house. I wash the dishes every morning. So, you know,
say a little bit more and I'll play for my boyfriend and all of our listeners will play for their boyfriend.
Well, that actually reminds me, if we're going to talk about that, I think I saw this on Instagram. There was a video and it was entitled "Make Sure You Marry the Right Kind of Person." Mm. And there was a woman and she was like half asleep, like looked miserable on the couch, sort of hanging off of the sofa with the baby wrapped in her arms, and the house was just a miserable nightmare. And this is in China somewhere. So maybe it was Douyin. Anyways, the husband comes home and he puts his bag down. And the first thing he does is carry the baby and put her in the crib, change her diaper. Then he picks up his wife and carries her, puts her in bed.
Yeah. And then I saw that video.
Yeah, and he cleaned the entire house, swept, mopped, put everything back to nice. And then he woke his wife up and brought her back out to the living room. She looked around and started crying and they hugged. And I thought, yeah, it really does matter the kind of person that, you know, you're with.
Absolutely. And this is not a much about exactly about the quote unquote equality. It's the equity that you both take in a marriage that makes it a good one. But, you know, it's not. Sometimes when we talk about videos like this, there will be people arguing for different sides. But I think at the end of the day, it's just one person willing to put the other person's feelings first, and they are okay with, or they're happy to do things for each other. And that's the important thing in a relationship.
Well, you know, I think it's really interesting because we're talking about that obviously looks like a traditional nuclear family. Maybe she doesn't have a job. We don't know the context, but that's what it looks like in the video. That's the only thing you can tell. But we live in a time in which both men and women are working. They're pursuing that, not just jobs, but they're pursuing their careers and their dreams. So we have a whole like new set of ways in which we need to begin to analyze how society functions. And for some men in all countries, this is true in China of some men, and this is true in the United States of some men, they still see, oh yeah, my wife works, but she's the woman, right? She needs to be the one that cleans the house. That's their job.
Yeah.
And so we still have these holdovers from medieval part of, you know, human history, basically, that haven't been corrected. What is your feeling about that, Alex? You know, you work a lot and you're with someone who works a lot. Who's supposed to clean the house, Alex?
Whoever has the time and the willing and the drive. If one person does more of the cleaning, then the other person does more of the other things. I enjoy cooking more than I enjoy cleaning up the house. Cooking feels like meditative to me. Cleaning the house feels like a chore, which it is. But I think, like I said, I don't think it's only fair when you split everything equally. It's when you take equity. Like, you do this part, I do the other part. Mm-hmm, and as long as we're both doing something, then at least for me, I will feel a lot more. I feel like it's more fair that way. But I do know people that feel like, oh, women should do this or that. And I will take one step back. And I know that if we're just talking about equity or how, you know, you do some parts of the relationship and the other person does the other parts. Sometimes people think, oh, I have to work so hard. I have to spend so much time and manage so many things outside of the household. And the household things can just be done by one person. And that's when you don't have a very good gauge of what it takes to keep a home. And that's when problems happen. I think the person that is doing the housekeeping with all of the little things that you don't know if you don't do it by yourself is actually making a lot more efforts. And honestly, when it comes to career and stuff, are you only doing it for your partner and your family? No, you're doing it for yourself as well. So within households, it's important to have a little bit. Take on something.
I have some China-specific cultural questions for you about this topic. Because
Let's hear them.
Just yesterday, I was on, I think, Instagram. But it was a Chinese lady speaking English. And she was talking about men in Chengdu and Sichuan, right? They have a particular, they're known for pampering their ladies. And she was showing these videos of men in aprons after they got home from work cleaning the house. And she said that in Chengdu, this is more expected of men, that not only do they work, but they come home and then they do everything to make sure that the wife is happy. You know, in the context of Chinese culture, what do you think about that?
Chengdu is like the North European of China, North Europe of China. It's actually not just Chengdu. They're actually, I think Shanghai men are kind of known for that as well. Like, they're very soft-spoken and they're very good at making delicious dishes. And they do some things that are looked at traditionally female responsibilities, but not really. And then Dongbei guys, actually, contrary to a lot of popular beliefs, Dongbei guys also do the same. Like, they might be like really loud when they talk, but they would say things like they're yelling and they're like, sit down. You don't cook tonight. I cook. Who told you could cook tonight? I will cook.
So they're manly and they're doing house chores.
Yeah, exactly. And then
in Texas, there's a way to do it. You could have both.
Exactly. You could talk like the manly talk and still do the manly thing, which is to help your wife cook and stuff. But the Chengdu people in Chengdu and Chongqing, they're known for, because they have a term for it. I feel like the other parts of China, maybe they do, but I've never heard of them. But the term for guys who like to listen to their wife, they're called pardo. Pardo. The pa, I'm not sure exactly what it means, but it's just like, oh, they're soft. They have soft ears to their wives. Whatever their wives say, they will listen to it. Mm. And there's the best video about this is like, and then if you hear this and you're like, oh, I don't think it's manly, there's a video someone took of what we call Chuan Yunnan, you know, the men from that area. They were, and we don't, by the way, we don't condone or encourage smoking, but in the video, they did this really funny camera movement. It's like, oh, someone's driving by this by this big tree, and there was a bunch of men just under it, and they drove by and they did slow motion right when the camera pulled up on the guys, and you see these guys that if you don't look at what they're wearing, they look like they're like mobsters, you know, like really cool. And they put the music under it, and then they look very serious and smoking their cigarettes. And then if you look at what they're wearing, they're all wearing aprons. It was like huge contrast. And then the caption goes, this is what a man should look like.
Mm. A smoking apron wear? Wow. Yeah. Like 1950s American wife, smoking and wearing an apron.
But also tough.
Well, you know, I want to just bring up a couple of details about International Women's Day 2024. This is from the UNWomen.org, Ian, so it's English. So there may be different stories under the other five UN official languages, but it says, invest in women, accelerate progress. And so this article, which was written on December 18th, 2023, is essentially about... when we're looking at developing countries, the way that we, when I say we, I mean the United Nations, I mean international organizations, the way that the developed world can help those nations best is by actually giving power and money and opportunities to women. So if you go into a community, in order to ensure the rights of women and girls, giving access to new technologies that are coming in or training on how to use the new well that's coming in, that kind of thing, can really help the community best and create the best inclusive societies by actually helping women receive that training and helping women receive that knowledge, those insights, and that education. Mm. And that usually produces better results. And there are facts and figures in the article to back that up.
Mm, that's there are a couple groups here in China and in the world actually trying to bring girls up, because we can't deny that there have been historical problems or consequences or bad habits and traditions and beliefs that have left some younger women or older women in that sense in kind of a void with today's technology and societal development. So there have I know quite a few groups that are dedicated to bring those girls or those women out of that void and try to help them better integrate into society and provide trainings and education and support. And those are usually, and those people, if you know people who are running those organizations, conversations with them are always very inspiring.
Mm. Well, I just want to problematize some of these things. I don't have I don't really have a strong opinion about them, but I do want to make you answer tough questions because it's fun for me. So this is from UNWomen.org, what we do. And this is from the same, website, the United Nations. And so it has facts and figures. And the first one, it says, women's economic empowerment is central to realizing women's rights and gender equality. And I'm not going to go into the details, but I want to problematize this for you by asking a question that American men seem to not be able to wrap their heads around and constantly bring up again and again. And this has been around since I've been a kid in the 80s, and it just doesn't go away. Oh, well, if women make as much as men, then how are we going to date women? Because women like to date men who make more money than them. Is this true? Is this a problem? What do you think about it? Because this is a kind of an old adage that men keep bringing up to problematize, deliberately sabotage women's economic empowerment.
Yeah, this is why I just said there are so many historical problems that have carried on till today. And then it's kind of naive to expect historical problems to just go away overnight when people have, like, when people are aware of how different it should be now. So historical problems don't just go overnight, and you can't just expect everything to be different now that we realize that it was wrong. So there's still, it's kind of built into people's head. And of course, women wanted to date men with money back then when they couldn't work. if they don't look for a man with money, then
I have no money. I need someone with money.
Then what are we going to do together? Unless we can both go and farm, you know, and feed ourselves. And I think that's something that's still true for some people when they think about relationships, and because it's traditional. Maybe that's what they saw in their parents, and that's what they saw in areas where women are not, it's not popular for women to go out of the household to live. And it's okay if you still think that, but you have to also be aware sometimes if you don't, like, don't push that on the women. Like, if you do meet someone who is making a lot more money and you feel like that's not okay, and then that's really not okay. If someone doesn't have economic advantage when especially when a woman is dating a man, it's okay for a man to be like, oh, I'll provide more because she could probably do her part or whatever. But it's not okay for you to be like, oh, she's making more money than I do. Then she's not, you know, a suitable a partner, a suitable girlfriend.
It might be intimidating for some men, you know.
The thing is, like, there are people who, when they get intimidated or when they get, quote unquote, threatened by a woman's economical power, I don't want to call it power, ability to make money, then they're like, ooh, she must be not a good woman because she doesn't fit in the traditional idea of a good woman who's looking for a man with more money.
Well, let's flip that around. Let's say you or someone you know is economically successful, viable person who makes like six figures in America, right? Mm. Are you gonna date someone who makes half of your pay, but he's really handsome and nice?
I want us to be able to, like, it depends on, I hesitated.
Qualifiers.
No, I think at the end of the day, it's for women. It's about your look on money. Like, what do you think value is? Like, if you make half of what I make and then you spend all of it on things that are like irrelevant to living, growing and enjoying the world. For example, if you have like you go out and drink every day and you spend it all of that versus you make half of what I make, but you actually spend money on either improving yourself or helping both of us exploring this world for me, then that's okay. And the premise of that is I'm making a lot of money and I'm making half of what I make is enough. And then I really think the qualification for a man, it's really not that he's handsome and nice. I think he has to be a very, very kind person and has a lot of integrity and responsibility towards a relationship. I think that's then at that point, it's like, you know what? And if that job is you're doing a job that you are getting value outside of money, that's important.
Well, I don't want to go dark here, but I want to actually flip this around because we're looking at what men in advanced countries like to complain about. But I think that there's a much more serious vein to the discussion about girls and women's empowerment in our globe, especially in the developing world. And that is that when men are the sole sources of economic power, not always, but sometimes those men abuse that privilege and that power because they have all of the means and the resources. And so if the relationship at home is unequal or, you know, even potentially abusive, then oftentimes girls and women have no recourse but to endure it because they are dependent on this tyrant.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of dark. And then I still believe that it's a small number of men in this world overall. And we're not going to bring up like any specific culture,
Yeah, of course.
But I think that it still exists. And that's one thing that I don't like about popular content nowadays. Sometimes it's like, it's okay for me to watch it because I'm not going to feel like what they're portraying is acceptable. You know, I don't know if you've seen these like short drama where the guy is like a super rich tycoon and young and handsome. And then they, for some reason, pay for a contract for this young girl. And then she goes through all kinds of torture with this guy. And still, it's either because she's already in love with the guy or at the end of the day, she's going to fall in love with the guy, which is worse almost.
Yeah.
And it's watched by a lot of people. And I'm just worried that that goes into young girls' mind and just thinking that's somehow either expected or accepted or it's okay.
Well, and in addition to empowering women through giving them access to economic sustainable development training and tools, resources, it also points out in this UN article, when women work, and this is true, economies grow. I mean, if you look back and then firstly, it's not my grandmother who has passed away, God rest her soul. She worked through World War II while my grandfather was fighting in the Pacific. And so she worked at a factory. He came back. She did leave her factory job for a few years, but then she realized she's bored at home, even with three kids. And so she started working part time at the factory again, like canning tomatoes. I think that's what she did.
Yeah.
She worked in a cannery. I'm not exactly sure what they canned. I think it was tomatoes, could have been peaches. I'm not sure, but it was one of those. And she found a lot of fulfillment in that. And so for the United States, historically, after World War II, there was a pivot where women began to move into economic roles in society. And as that happened, the United States also saw the fastest, most impressive growth in its economic history. So from the 1950s on, the United States just went, you know, as everyone knows around the world, went into the stratosphere economically. So when women are participating in the economy, you see the economy grow. Now, I don't want to take China out specifically, but everyone's always talking about China's economic growth. It's a worldwide debated topic all the time. It's like the political football to pass around. China's economy is growing at 5.2% last year in 2023, which is more than double that of the United States, which grew at 2.5%. So you can see as you look around, everywhere I go, men and women are working in various roles in society, in grocery stores, in delivery services, wherever you go, whatever it is, in factories. And, you know, and if you look at the pictures of, you know, Apple's factories, you have women and men in there. So like both men and women are participating in China, which is now also the fastest, the new fastest growing major economy in the world. Obviously, there are smaller economies that are growing faster now, like Indonesia. But, you know, it's when women enter the workforce that suddenly, you know, economic growth skyrockets. And I have to say, I know a lot of people are like, oh, we should all live on a farm and modernity is bad for us. I like them all. And so I like modernity. You know, I like having nice plush cars to go places
I know.
In. So, yeah. So I think it's great that when women in the modern era of human civilization and society have entered into the workplace, we have seen the most astounding changes in modern human history.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we should be appreciative of the fact that you got to go to work too, Alex.
I know. Well, first off, just very quickly, I think people who say we should go and all go live on a farm, they're talking about taking all the modern technology and everything that we've advanced to so far back to the farm with them and then live on a farm. I don't think these people could just go back to a farm where there's no, let's give them electricity, okay?
The Amish.
I don't think they can go back to live on a farm when there's no technology, when there's no like internet, there's no cell phone, there's no YouTube, TikTok and everything else and Wikipedia or whatever that they can just look up for the answer that they don't know, the facts that they don't know about. I don't think that's what they're talking about. They're talking about
medical technology. Okay, you got liver cancer. Goodbye, grandpa. That's it. You know, but in modernity, he's got a shot.
Yeah. And then like every year you're going to just pray that the weather is good, because whether you can eat or not, it's not entirely up to how hard you work. It's also depending on the weather and stuff. So first off, I don't think they're talking about that. Second off, that's just my personal rant. But you're absolutely correct. You've worked in education and media. I worked in, technology and also largely in media. Especially in technology, there's so many women. That's insanely. There's a lot of women, and especially nowadays, there's a lot of female programmers as well. And then in media, even a lot of jobs that are traditionally man jobs, for example, what we call the Steadicam operator, where you have to carry like that. I don't know if you've seen it. It looks like you have like a robot, a giant robot waistband on you, but you can spin in the middle of it, and there's a giant robot arm that sticks out, and the camera's at the end of the robot arm, and it goes all different ways. Like,
I wouldn't even say it's just men. Like, I couldn't wear that thing. I met the guy that I met who was wearing that thing was a full like 10 centimeters taller than me. He looked like a giant.
Yeah, but that job is done by a lot of women in the industry, actually, and they're very, very good at it. Yeah. So, yes, you know, we're kind of in everything. We're not in men's sports, but even in men's sports, there's like female doctors and nutritionists and other people. So it is a very fair statement to say that men and women are both in the workforce a lot.
You know, I've mentioned this before in previous shows, but I want to make sure that it's in this show, because I think it's important for American men and women to understand how they're being left behind. And this is not just pro-China. This is like, hey, Americans, we deserve better. But in China, women get 6 months maternity leave and men get 1 month paternity leave. In Europe, you have similar numbers where women and men get time off for paternity leave. I'm not just saying yay China, but, you know, in America, if you, unless you work for a company that gives you that specifically because you work for that company, you get zero, zilch, not an yet. So, I mean, I can't even imagine that you're working at a fast food company that doesn't give you offer that service to you. And so what do you, you just work up until you burst? I don't understand. This is crazy. America, we deserve better. Women deserve better. Women literally making the next generation of human beings to fill society's roles. And you're just making them work up until the moment they have to go to the hospital to give birth. That's insane. We deserve better. Women deserve better. Men deserve better. Families deserve better.
Yeah, that's why you pick, at least for the old company that I work at, I think, they do the similar things, and it's really important if you are looking to build a family. I think it's important to look at the family the company policies that allow you to do that. That's why our couple of our managers who are located in Singapore and in the United States are able to have a very, very good maternity leave to, you know, have a healthy birth and good recovery time to be with their kids. And they come back, you know, glowing and more relaxed and more efficient and everything.
I have got a question for you, Alex. This is interesting to me because retirement age in China was set, I guess, a long time ago when mortality rates were lower. So now for today, this year, 2024, and all the way back to 2022, I think Chinese people tend to live a couple years longer than U.S. Americans. So it's completely changed. But retirement for men is 60. And for women, I think it's 50 or 55, depending on the kind of career they have.
Yes.
Is that going to change? How do people feel about that? What is the feeling in China about retirement age?
That's a very, very complicated question to answer, Jason.
Yay! But
I know. So, for example, when it comes to the overall retirement age, so basically you can choose to retire when you're 55. And then if you're women working jobs that are very physically demanding and that could be physically damaging, if you work in a factory that produces fabrics or whatever, then I think they ask you to retire at 50, I think, because for men, it's an earlier retirement age as well. If you work in those lines of works, because that's when you're older, it just probably does more harm to your body. So that you have an earlier retirement age. For people that are in manager positions or, you know, like professors or whatever, for women, they go up to 60, or they could even, and if you're a higher management, you could retire at 65. And that's what my mom is trying to do right now. And in terms of whether they're going to push that retirement age, I mean, I don't know. I've never been at the age of 60 because I feel like I need to know how I feel about my body when I'm at 60. Because right now, at the age of 34, I'm having all kinds of problems. You know, I don't know how I will be like 25 years.
I suppose the question isn't, should retirement age be changed, right? Because that is a whole show, or at least a couple. So that is a whole different conversation. I guess my question is more, there's a difference between men and women in their retirement age. So how do Chinese people feel about generally, historically, or, you know, your parents' generation feel about women retiring earlier? So let's just make it equal. Let's pretend Joe and Jane work in a grocery store, and they both are checkout people. And they're, one is, obviously Joe is a dude, and Jane is a lady. Does Joe feel good about Jane retiring before him by 10 years? Is that okay? Is this like a weird, or is this just normal? And no, you know, how does this work in Chinese society?
I don't know why Joe would feel anything about when Jane is retiring. You know, it's about, just jokingly though, I do know that quite a lot of men, they go through a very tough period after they retire because they feel like they have no sight of or no sense of where their value is, and they become, you know, they're busy and now they're not busy, and so they become very annoying. Like my dad was just kind of super irritating when he first retired. And so, you know, if they have a couple years earlier, so a couple years later, they could at least the women and the children of the household could have that irritating period a few years later. But I don't think people feel any specific way about the fact that men are expected to retire a little later than women. It's just something that has been there, and nobody has felt like, and again, it's not like after women retire, they're forbidden from working. Mm-hmm. They could still find different things to do.
If you work
and then
you can't draw a pension, right?
I don't think that affects it.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
So you get double pay. I'm looking forward to this now.
I'm not sure, but I'm not sure how that actually works because, contrary to other places I've lived in China, you just pay that, your company pays that for you every month. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people don't really worry about pension. They know that it'll come. So when people make that decision, I don't think my mom really calculated about how late she's going to receive pension. I think actually you don't receive pension if you're still working, but again, it adds to what you're going to receive after you. So it's not like, for example, the legal retirement age for women is like 55, but my mom's going to work until she's 65.
Yeah.
And that means she's going to receive more pension when she retires.
Really?
It doesn't mean, yeah, of course.
I don't know. I'm not sure how your system works. I tried to investigate, but all of the most important documents were only in Chinese. And so that made my job too challenging, and I was like, forget it. Okay, so let's move on from retirement to some other issues. Now, this is obvious, and this is something we should talk about. And this is from the article, Globally, Women Are Paid Less Than Men. This is still the case. In most countries around the world, there is still a lack of women in all kinds of leadership positions in all kinds of countries and all kinds of industries. So what is it going to take, in your opinion, in your assessment, to fix this? One question I'd like to pose it this way. In the United States, sometimes we have, especially California, where I'm from, we have specific laws that say you need two people, your workforce, with this kind of built-in diversity. And they tell you some people need to be handicapped, some people need to be of a specific gender, some people need to be of specific races or ethnic backgrounds or even economic history. So you have you must meet these requirements to fill your job postings. So how does that work here in China, or what do you feel about it? Is it important for women to make as much money as men? And if so, how do we get there?
I will say that it is important for women to get paid the same if you're doing the same job. For example, if we're both managers of a team of 20 people, of product designers for the same product line, we definitely should be getting paid equal. But a lot of company policies make it very hard to know if you're getting paid less than your male peers. But if you can find out about that one way or another, I think the best way to do is to go up to your superiors and have a conversation. Mm-hmm. Most of the time nowadays in big companies, at least they are, if they want to keep their job, basically, even if it's not out of the sense of, gender equality and stuff, they will respond to it. If they don't, then you might want to consider your future in this company.
In terms of having corporate conversations, there are ways to problematize that further. I don't really think it's necessary. Mm. Yeah, obviously, if women are doing the same amount of work, they deserve the same amount of pay. Some other statistics from the United Nations. Women are less likely to have access to social protection. And furthermore, women are more likely to be unemployed for longer periods of time. So I guess this goes to our society's biases that hiring managers tend to hire men first. So, this is a cultural thing, I'm presuming, that we need to work on as a globe. And, the challenge with this is, it's not just that there are roughly 200 countries in the world. It's that in each country, you have subcultures and different regions. So it's not like, as a planet, we're just moving forward. That's not true. Some places are moving backwards. Some places are stagnant. Some places are moving forward. This is an extremely challenging thing to overcome. So, you work in media also, TV, movies, entertainment, all kinds of stuff. You have lots of friends who work in AI and cartoons. For me, as an American, I look to, Hollywood to try to provide the role models that are requisite for entertainment. So that you look at this movie, there are women leaders in these movies. Those women leaders represent how we should be seeing women in society. So for example, this is the Chinese classic Mulan about a female soldier that, shows men who typically see men as these, you know, brutish warrior types, that women can also take on those same kind of roles. We need that kind of representation, I think that's the word, where we show women in those kinds of roles to basically change not just men, but men and women's perspectives about what women are capable of. Am I wrong? What would you add to that?
I personally think that if just let women do what they can do and don't deny them, if they demand, if they ask to do a certain job, don't come out and say, well, this is not traditionally done by women, so you can't do it. I am not a believer of like women could match up to, just very generally speaking, that women could just match up to man in terms of physicality, the way that they're built and stuff. There's just times that we're just built different. And I think that's okay to admit and to, practice that in everyday life. But if I tell you, because there are women that are really strong, they're, you know, they have other different qualities than most of the other women. And when those women step up and say, I can do this, we shouldn't just deny them from the get-go and say, oh, you can't because you're a woman.
There's a website I used to check out a couple times. It's really interesting. It's called Girls with Muscle, and it's not girls. It's a full adult women, but they are like these big, burly, like Arnold Schwarzenegger looking.
King Kong Barbies.
Yeah, seriously. And yeah, most women, I would feel less comfortable. I have to say, this is sexist of me to say, but if there's a ladder coming to my window in California, I'm scared. You know, I would prefer to be a man because they actually have lower physical requirements for women to be on the firefighting force. But these women on these websites, you know, these, I'd be like, please save me. Because they're like, they have 10 times as much muscle as I will ever have.
Yeah, I think that's really like at the end of the day, it's like I think the ultimate goal is to just look at everybody as humans and certain
individuals
humans
have more
individuals. Certain individuals just are more capable in one aspect than the rest of the whole population, and just allow them to be who they are. They're girls who, for example, like I said, there are girls who are amazing Steadicam operators that are, and that's such a traditionally a male job, and let them do it because they're great. They can do it. But it's not like, oh, because one girl did it, one woman did it, I look at the other women around.
All right, Tina, put like, it on.
you can do this too. No, I can't. Alex, be a camera operator. No, I don't want to.
I don't want to either. From me. Yeah, but I mean, there are men that are frail in like me and like other nerds who are super. Oh. You know, yeah, we can't do all the physical stuff either. I'm serious. Like, my brothers, all three of them are work in construction and framing. And when I was a kid, I supported them on the work site, but I found it brutally hard. And they were like, yay, this is so much fun, pounding nails and concrete and like, you know, paint on their clothes and raising walls off the floor. And I was able to do it weekly, but I was like, I got to find something else before I become an
my
adult.
Life needs to be different.
Yeah, I can't, I'm not built like my brothers who are just like these, you know, monstery kind of, you know, worker men. And I knew that there was no way I could grow up to be like them.
What a word choice.
They're huge. They're all, you know, meaty, muscly guys who go to the gym all the time. And I was just like at home playing chess. And my dad's like, we got to go to the construction site. And my brothers would be like, let's go. And I'd be like, oh, gosh. Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you've seen this popular video recently. There's one girl who looks like, you know, she was wearing kind of loose clothes. And then she just didn't. If you just look at her face, you would not think that she is super strong, like incredibly strong. And she just goes to this one gym, and there's a lot of these like dudes that are, you know, working on their muscles and their bodybuilding. And then she goes in and she's like, oh, I'll just do it's not a deadlift, it's whatever, like a press or whatever. I don't know the exact names, but I'll just do that of like 150 kilos or something, 160 kilos,
oh my gosh,
whatever the weight is. And she just goes in and she does it with so much ease. And all the guys are like, whoa, that is insane. And then this one guy, he's like, and then he goes, oh my God, can I add you on WeChat? And then in the beginning, you thought, oh, this is a guy who's like, oh, there's a girl at the gym, I'm going to add her on WeChat. But he said, I want to add you on WeChat so I can follow your videos. Like, that's incredible that you could waste, like you could lift that much. I need a follow and study and catch up. And he was very genuinely just shocked by how easily she did that move. And it was hilarious.
Let's do some more statistics and we can discuss them. This is from the same article on the United Nations. Women are constrained by achieving the highest leadership positions. And this is a fact from this year, released December 2023. Only 5% of Fortune 500 CEOs are women. That is shocking. Before I read that, I thought it sure must be like 30 or 40%. You know, we were going somewhere, but reading this on the, in this article was like, we have so far to go. Wow.
I would actually, you know, for me, like we're always saying, like, let people do things that they're good at. And, you know, I feel like we shouldn't just look at CEOs of the company. Mm-hmm. You could also look at the biggest shareholders of the company. Mm-hmm. And the, for example, there's other CXOs, CTOs, CFOs, COOs that are equally important, especially CFOs. I think a lot of CFOs are indeed women. And though these people, I think, are making also very, very important decisions for the company, and they're making, I don't think, any less contribution or impact to the society and the whole world. And I think we should probably look at, here's like a little advice to Fortune and to Forbes, so whoever that is looking at this kind of data, make it more elaborate. I think look on a broader spectrum of the gender composition of leaderships of big companies in the world, and the CEOs, you know, as we all know, sometimes CEOs, it could be, yes, of course, would like more women to be CEOs, but just the fact that there's not as many female CEOs, although 5% is a little low, but just the fact that there are not many CEOs doesn't mean that women are not making important decisions or impact within the corporate. So look at the other positions as well.
I mean, I agree with that. I think that's a very valid point, but we certainly, we should be open as a society to that changing. And so in my humble opinion, as the male in this voice, in this show today, I think it's important for us to move towards a world in which gender, because these are thinking roles, and women and men have different, and similar strategies for thinking. This is not a physicality thing. So we definitely should, I think it starts in university. I think it starts in school. You know, we have this problem in STEM in the United States, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, where early on women are told what kind of roles that they should be filling in society, and girls start to gravitate towards the roles in which, you know, they're told that they are suited for, and males start to gravitate towards the roles that they are told that they are suited for. And that's where we end up with 5% of CEOs. So we need to tell girls early on, you can be, you know, a super wealthy, you know, own your own company, entrepreneur, start your, set out there and look for VC capital and go to business school.
I'm hopeful. I'm so hopeful. If you look at the new Shark Tank episodes, they're like, I think I've watched like two or three girls that are like 12 or 14. And oh my God, these little girls, they're talking about the business they're building. And it's not just like, oh, I'm being used as the cute little kid for my parents to come on the show. they just wave me around and get the appreciation and you know, the affection from the judges, from the sharks. There's one little girl talk about the manufacturing. Like, I was like, I don't think in any point of my life I've known that many terms about anything at all, and she knew everything about manufacturing the company and then all of the economical terms, and she does like all of the calculations super fast on the spot. And I was like, I got goosebumps when I was watching this little kid. I was like, what is she going to grow up to be? She's going to run the world. Oh my God. So I'm very hopeful.
Well, I certainly hope so. You know, there was a movie, I think it was called Hidden Voices or something like that. Hidden Figures, that's right. It's about women working for NASA who made dramatic changes in how...
Katherine Johnson.
Especially with mathematics, you need people who have a gift. You know, Jason can't just go learn a bunch of math and become really good at it. Honestly, a lot of the people who are really good at math have natural talent at that from a young age. And then they have the education that accompanies that, you know, support from their parents to enable them. So like... wherever that comes from, whoever has that ability, society needs those skills and techniques in order to improve. You know, I was thinking about this. I was watching a video of Moby, and he's standing in front of this giant elaborate keyboard and stuff. And I'm thinking, I have no idea how the plastic is manufactured, where the plastic is extracted from, the electronics, all the batteries, you know, this is... hundreds of thousands of different people, their ideas over hundreds of years went into being able to make devices like your laptop or like whatever it is. Like, so each time we have a brilliant person, whoever they are, we need to give them the skills necessary so that we can have better technology, better science, better engineering, better mathematics. And this can come from both genders. And I think parents who see a child, whether they be a boy or a girl, who is interested in business or interested in science, they need to be cultivating that child's, giving them the tools that they're going to need to facilitate their development for what they're going to be. Oftentimes, parents have this canned idea, I'm going to have a child, they're going to grow up to be this. That's actually terrible for children. They're going to end up being completely like what they are going to be like. Our job as parents is not to make them into what we want them to become, is to give them the tools to become what they want to become.
Yeah, don't put them into little molds so that they could fit in and to have a good life the way that you imagine, because the good life that the parents' generation imagine is going to be super past tense when the kids grow up.
Right. Yeah, especially now in the last 100 years or so. Everything's changing so fast that we don't even know what the future is going to be like in 5 years. Okay.
Yeah.
This is another article. This is by Pamela Murillo Zamoria, and it is gender equality. Is the U.S. ahead, from February 15, 2024? And it's just one quote I want to read here that I think is really interesting. This lady, Pamela, she grew up in Costa Rica. She moved to the United States. She says, even though Latin America is always talked about as a place where sexism is prevalent, I would argue the U.S. is not doing much better. And I think that's really interesting because Americans, you know, one of the most advanced economic countries in the world, they like to see themselves as ahead in all kinds of things when it's not true. So there's a lot in my home country that we need to be doing a lot better to tackle the problems of sexism and gender inequality. And I think it's unfair for people, and this often comes from Europe and the United States, Canada, and so forth, for them to think, oh, we're in the lead in, you know, gender equality or whatever it is, whatever it is. And it's just not true a lot of the time. And, you know, I don't see this as I'm critical of America because I don't like America thing. I'm critical of America because we can do better. And I think that's what's preventing America from becoming better in a lot of categories. Oftentimes we're like standing there with the, you know, the sports glove up with the finger up, you know, and you're like, we're number one in some things, but there's a lot of things we're not number one in. And gender equality is one of those things. So we really need to evaluate ourselves moving forwards. How can we improve, catch up with, you know, some other places that may be doing it better?
Yeah, I'm not, you know, trying to criticize anything, but there's a very popular saying in China we call, your volume doesn't speak the truth. You know, just because that you're loud about something, if you're really standing with the truth, you don't have to be so, you know, vocal and loud about it. Just because you're screaming doesn't mean you're screaming truth or reality. And I know there are a lot of like advocates for gender equality or gender equity in the United States, but there are still problems. Like, there are people that are very, very highly educated people that think you would assume that they would have these kind of ideologies built in their belief system. They would actually still carry old or more traditional or more conservative ideas about what you can do, what you cannot do. Or it doesn't always come off as aggression. It doesn't always come off as attacks or just, you know, mean comments. It comes in all different ways. And for example, they would feel like they could lecture you at any given time, and which they do, and have had that before. You know, they're just like, oh, Alex, I have to respectfully tell you. I was like, please don't respect me and actually start arguing. I would love to have an argument. If you think this is not okay, let's do it. Let's take it outside. Let's do it. Don't just respectfully tell me. And then, yeah. And it was like huge a couple times, like, you know, people that I knew that I thought we were, you know, pretty close and at least on the same intelligence level, that came to me and set things in that kind of manner. And it was actually a lot more irritating than like, Alex, this is wrong. Like, what are you doing? Or, you know, why? Ask me why, instead of just like, I'm going to tell you and I'm going to say this is under the disguise of respect, but it's really not.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things going on in your articulation. Oftentimes, with so many different things that we could analyze from the statement that you just made. Mm. Beyond gender equality, yeah, anytime someone is trying to yell out something, you know, like if you go to a 5-star restaurant, you're dressed in your best clothing and, you know, you are making a big scene, you probably don't belong there. Like the person who goes there and like, you know, a polo and like sweatpants is probably going to be the actual rich person who belongs in the Michelin 5-star restaurant or whatever. But okay, I wanted to move on. We've done the hard stuff. We don't have super a lot of time left. So I wanted to do just the fun stuff. This is an article from New York Times, February 10th. For Gen Z, an age-old question, who pays for dates? So in a world where men and women are increasingly making similar amounts of money, at least in the developed world, who's supposed to pay for a date? If a woman says, oh, I believe in gender equality, does that mean we split the bill? Or is it romantic for the man to pay for the first date or two? What do you think, Alex?
It's really up to the individual. If I want you to pay, pay it. If I want to pay for it, I'll pay for it. It's really, I don't think there should be like a set rule saying if you support gender equality or gender equity, then you shouldn't let men pay, or you should always split the bill and whatever. I feel like paying for things is a way of showing care for each other. And if we look at things, that if you were really saying that we have a very equal position in this really in a relationship, then I would want to buy things for the man, or the man would want to buy things for me, because when I buy things for you, you feel happy. Well, yeah. And if you are, you know, if you're not making as much money, or if you're not comfortable spending that money, then you just need to find a person that is comfortable spending the money for you guys to do things.
You know, for that kind of stuff, my wife and I, we've all obviously been together for more than a decade. So that's easy for us to do. And it doesn't matter who pays for stuff most of the time.
Yeah.
However, I'm not sure what the inside of a woman's mind looks like at 20. But the inside of a man's mind at 20 for a lot of men is, oh my gosh, how do I get a girlfriend? Oh my gosh, how do I get a girlfriend? And they are lost. They are confused. They are taking tips that don't even work with each other. They're listening to all kinds of advice. They're on Instagram. And so they're terrified about making the wrong choices. They want to know, how do I impress a lady? And some of them are worried, if I pay, does that mean I have to pay forever? Or if I pay, does that show that I don't respect her? Or should I, if I don't pay and if I ask for it to be split, is she going to not see me again? And so the inside of a 20-year-old boy's mind, young man's mind is, I want a girlfriend, but I have no idea what to do. Like, so
this is mommy Alex speaking out.
Yeah. Mommy Alex, what do we say for first dates for young people? First date, should the man be like, I'm going to man up and pay? Or should he be like, you know, there should be a negotiation, or should he just sit? What would you tell a young man?
It's so simple. If you want to cover it, just say, hey, I'll cover the bill. Yeah. And that's it. And if the woman says, well, actually, I would like to split it. Yeah. But no, I think if the woman goes, well, how dare you? Like, you're disrespecting me by doing that. I was like, look, and she might be right in why she's saying it, but mate, you guys are not a good match. That's it. Also, 20-year-old boys, if you have all of this time trying to decide and looking for tips to see how not to offend some random lady you're going to meet, put that thinking into your schoolwork, into your job, or whatever. Build up your career and you'll find a better match in the future. My God.
Yeah, actually, that's my advice too. And it has nothing to do with gender as much as, like, I feel that when I was young, I spent a lot of time also in that same mentality, looking for someone who's the right person for me, right? But actually, women I found, as you know, I grew up and became a man, respond to men who are working on themselves, not we're looking for someone else.
Exactly. We call it in China, we call these men who spend a lot of time and efforts on like picking up women or trying to appease women and think that they look super good doing it. We call these oily men.
Really?
They're greasy.
Please elaborate. What does that mean? What is an oily man? I want to know so badly.
It's like, for example, if you look handsome, or if you treat women nice, then that's attractive, right? But if you treat women nice in a way you're like, look how nice I'm treating you. Look, the fancy words I'm saying to you. And oh my God, you're so, look at you. And then they might not even be saying that because they want to date you. That's just how they excuse me, that's just how they grew up, or in their adulthood, that's what they made, what they have been made to believe works on women. And that just makes you feel like when you have a good dish, of course you want the good olive oil, good butter in it. But if you put too much butter, it just becomes gross. Like, and you know, so we call them kind of like greasy man who tried to do that too much. So again, just be comfortable in your own skin and don't try to impress anyone else super hard.
Mm. Well, you know, I think China has also, like, we are out of time, but I just want to mention that the recently, in the past tense, two sessions began meeting. And one of the things I find really interesting is that it is different from the United States in that Congress is comprised mainly of lawyers. It's like 80% lawyers in the U.S. Congress. In China, they have built-in representative mechanisms since the very first two sessions, 1954, when the NPC began meeting. There were a certain amount of minorities of every single ethnic group. There are a certain amount of women. I think it used to be 23%, but it's much higher now percentage that are women in the NPC and the CPPCC. And, you know, so I find, and it's also workers and technicians and laborers and actors.
Yeah.
And so I find it's really interesting. You know, in America, we're talking about the corporate world. Who should be where? You know, should we be representing everyone? When the United States claims to be a democracy, we should really be more concerned about making sure that all voices are heard in our government. And so I think for me personally, that the United States could learn from China, not just in terms of gender equality or, you know, ethnicity and minorities, but also workers. You know, I don't want a Congress in the United States comprised of 80% lawyers. No one in America trusts lawyers to begin with. And then we put them in charge. I think, if we had some carpenters and some, window dressers, I would be a lot more comfortable with the kind of decisions that were going on. We are out of time. Go ahead. Last thoughts from Alex.
Just last thoughts from Alex, and then build it on what Jason has just said. It's important to have the voices of people who know the life of the majority. I know that it's important to have media representation, but a lot of the voices that have come from, you talked about the political world. I'm in the media world, and I'm seeing a lot of media voices coming out of the United States that sounded like, oh, it's empowering to women, but it's actually not. For example, I'm not going to name names, but there are celebrities who are going around and saying, oh, women, like, we don't want women to watch anything where a woman is portrayed as a housewife, because don't be a housewife, be a leader, be a whatever, be a something. And I feel like that is deeply unfair to a lot of women that do think family value is important, and then they're okay with it. Again, if they're okay with it, I don't think anyone should be shamed for their life choices. As long as they're doing it with respect, I don't think they should be shamed for
it. So back to the individual. So I think the thesis that Alex has put out, and I'm going to be her first follower of her new political cause, is individualism. So you have, whether it's a man or a woman, whether it's a political role, media role, or work role, it's about the individual. What do they want? How do they want to express themselves? And we should put other considerations aside. That is all the time. If you want to add to this conversation, tell us we're right, we're wrong. Tell us about your situation. Please email us at welovethebridge@gmail.com, and we would be happy to read your comments and discuss them on the air. Thank you so much for your time, listeners. Thank you so much for your time, Alex.
Thank you, Jason, and happy Women's Day, everybody.